Welcome to And With Your Spirit, a homily podcast that takes preaching out of the sanctuary and moves it into your daily life. Let us make ourselves open to the voice of Christ and the movement of the Holy Spirit, that we might be transformed.
Good evening. In the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit,
Amen.
The Lord be with you. First of all, it's good to be back. Last week, I was supposed to be on retreat down in Tampa Bay, actually on the same Sunday that the game was being played at the Buck Stadium. I was supposed to be flying in, but I tested positive for COVID a couple days before. So, yay, right? It happens to all of us. Anyway, so I wasn't able to go, and so I found a cabin nearby. Some generous people let me stay there for a few days to get away for a little bit of retreat while trying to also isolate. I'm now past my 10-day, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But anyways, I heard that Deacon Rocky knocked it out of the park last week with his homily, so well done. And that Father Ryan was a good presider, but he also got off the hook of preaching. So you have to hear his vocation story some other time, all right? Anyways, it's great to be back tonight to celebrate today's feast day. I claim him as one of my patrons, even though he wasn't my confirmation patron, St. John Bosco. I go to him every day for his example. I'm going to talk about his life story and some lessons we can learn from him in the homily. For the times where we have not been saints ourselves, let's take a moment to call to mind our sins and ask the Lord to make us worthy to celebrate these sacred mysteries. Tonight, I'd just like to tell the story of St. John Bosco, if I can. I was trying to think of, like, one driving point to, like, start off with and kind of let linger and then bring back at the end, like I try to do in most of my homilies. Couldn't think of anything, so I'm just going to tell you the story because his life is full of so many different kind of jewels or gems to pull out. So anyways, St. John Bosco, born Giovanni Melchior Bosco, or Melchior, you recognize that name? One of the three wise men, right? What if we started doing that again? I'm going to get off on so many tangents tonight. What if we did that? What if we started naming our kids after the wise men? Come on, it's great. Anyways, John Bosco was born the third son of a young couple in a town called Becchi, or near Castelnuovo, or northern Italy, a small town. His dad died when he was just 2 years old. And so the three boys, he was just two, but his older brothers and his mother began to work the farm, and basically were just a subsistence farmer. So whatever they could grow or trade is what they had. Clothing, food, everything, that's what they had. As a young kid, he began to watch his mother, not unlike many youngest sons. Typically, vocations come from the oldest or the youngest in the family, and typically the oldest ones are like really hard workers, and the youngest ones are really holy. So look around for vocations or priests that you know. You can probably guess, older or younger son, all right? Anyways, I'm not the holy one, so I'm on the older side. Anyways, so he, as a young boy, began watching his mother. Her name was Margarita, just like Margarita, right? But they called her Marguerite. Anyways, he began to watch her, and she was a very faithful woman. She'd go to church early on Sunday to pray, and he'd like to go with her. Maybe he was just trying to curry favor as the youngest son. But either way, seeds were being planted in his heart that faith was very important, and he followed his mother's lead. And by the time he was 9 years old, he was already doing prayers on his own, praying before he went to bed at night, trying to read the Bible, that kind of stuff. He was not in school, because back then in the early 1800s, you didn't have to be in school. Maybe 100 years, you didn't have to be in school either. He didn't have to go to school, and so he didn't know how to do much, but he tried on his own. When he was 9 years old, he had a dream. He actually had a series of dreams, but the one that's the kind of the prominent one was that he found himself on the edge of a hill, and he saw a vast expanse of boys, and they were all like swearing at each other and fighting. And then in the midst of all of that, he was trying to scream to get them to stop, like, you know, boys his age, basically. But they wouldn't listen. And then a striking man and woman appeared near him. And the man said, with love and with strength, you will conquer these, your friends. Love and strength, you're going to conquer these who are your friends. And then the lady beside him said, you must be robust. You must rely on providence, and you must be strong. You used strong again twice. Anyways, in that moment, then he saw some of the boys turn to sheep, actually. Instead of being like ruffians, they became as docile as lambs. And then he woke up. That dream stuck with John Bosco for the rest of his life. He later found out that that was actually Mary and Jesus appearing to him. basically giving him his vocation at a young age. And so at first, he didn't realize that at the time, at first he thought that meant, well, I'm supposed to help my buddies, right? And so shortly thereafter, whenever he was a 10, 11-year-old, early basically in middle school, a circus came to town, and people were performing magic tricks and juggling things and walking on tight ropes and all this. And he saw how all of the kids in town would go and sit quiet and still and behave as they watched the performance. And little John, age 10, realized, I can make my friends stop fighting or stop misbehaving if I can capture their attention. And so he started following performers around to learn their tricks, and he'd practice on his own at home. Eventually, by the time he was 11, he had already mastered a few of the tricks and began to perform them for kids in the neighborhood. He'd get them to come and watch the show, and then in the middle of the show, not unlike many things that we have, like commercials on TV, he'd stop and give them a sermon that he had heard on Sunday the previous week from the priest at his church. And they'd get back to his games again to entertain them. He would do this all the time, right? And as he was doing this, people in town began to wonder, this is not usual for a pre-teenage boy to do. Is there something deeper here in him? And eventually his local priest began to kind of encourage him in a vocation to the priesthood. So by that age, 11, not even 12 years old yet, he had asked if he could go away to start a study to learn Latin, because that was the kind of the prerequisite to being in seminary, to go learn Latin so he could become a priest one day. And his mother said yes, basically. But her other sons, his older brothers, both said, absolutely not. This was a farming family. They had one income. And the income was the only thing that fed them, literally. Whatever they grew, they ate. What they raised, they wore. I mean, that's all they had. And the older brothers, who had spent their whole life learning to be dad, basically, they said, well, he doesn't get to go off and study and read books and have a life of leisure. He has to stay on the farm. And actually, one day his mom caught his older brother beating him and telling him, you are going to be a farmer like us. She put a stop to that, like a good mom would, good Catholic mom anyway. So by the time he was 12 years old, he had found a priest nearby that said he would take him in and teach him Latin if he would help serve and do house chores and things. And so he did. He left his home at 12 years old to go study Latin so he could go to seminary one day. Through the years, in his teenage years, he was not able to learn it as quickly as they had hoped, and his money basically was dry. He couldn't go off to seminary because he didn't have any funding. By the time he was 20 years old, another priest, Father John Cafasso, who's now a saint as well, also from the Turin, northern Italy area, he picked him up and said, there's something special about this kid. I'm going to make sure he gets to go through seminary. And so for the next 6 years, from 20 to 26 years old, John Bosco was in seminary training and formation for the priesthood. He was ordained at age 26 in 1831, is that right? Yeah, 1831, it'll be 16 years later, in 1831, and he was assigned to the city of Turin. Turin was like a run-down town. Some factories had come in, and they were starting to basically try to use all of the uneducated work to make a bunch of money. And because the people were uneducated, the businessmen would make pretty bad deals with them. They'd sign contracts for things that were much beyond the work and were totally unfair. And John Bosco began to see this, and especially because the businesses would do this for other, like, teenagers, not just adults, but for kids that were even, you know, dumber, right? Pull the wool over their eyes. One day when John Bosco was vesting for a mass at the church called St. Francis of Assisi in Turin, he saw the sacristan taking one of those candle snuffer, like, stick things, you know? He saw him taking one of those things and hitting a teenage guy who was much bigger than the sacristan was. I could picture this happening, even around here, actually. Nothing against our sacristans, but you could see it happening. Anyway, so the kid was big, but he was hitting him with the candle snuffer. And basically, the kid was trying to take something like a candle or something out of the sacristy, maybe bread, I don't know, maybe probably the wine, actually. Anyways, trying to take something out of the sacristy, and the sacristan was trying to run him off. And John, so Father John, walked over and said, what's going on? He said, oh, he comes to our church and tries to steal things from us. I gotta beat him off, basically. And he said, go call that boy back here. And the sacristan thought, he's going to let him have it, right? Father's going to give it to him. They brought the boy back, and the boy came, and he said, what are you doing here? And he said, well, I don't have enough for my family. My work doesn't give me much money. I have no time. And he said, well, can you read? And the guy said, no. And he said, can you do math? And he said, no. He said, can you serve my mass? And the boy said, no. He said, can you speak Latin? No. And then he said, can you eat? Something like that. And he said, yes. And he goes, then have supper with me and we're going to work this out. And so then they got together later on and he sat down with him and found out about the poor employment conditions. And so he said, I'm going to help you renegotiate your contract so you can get a fair wage. This right here started everything else for John Bosco. Because as soon as it worked out for this boy, he brought five of his friends back and said, can you help them next? And then slowly over time, over the course of years, more and more teenagers kept coming to Father John and saying, can you help me? Not, can you help me like find my vocation or be virtuous? It was, can you just help me figure out how to live, how to get fair treatment in my workplace? And he did. He just met them on a human level, and it began to explode. Shortly thereafter, he realized how many young men, especially that were orphaned or were formerly delinquents, like in what we call like a juvenile court or whatever, how many there were in the city of Turin. And so he began to pull them in because everyone else was casting them out. He started having meetings with them on Sundays in the afternoon and said, come on over here. And he grabbed his mom, Mama Marguerite, and said, you make supper. And she'd make giant pots of stew and bread for every boy who came. And they'd play games in a big yard. And just like whenever he was a young man, he'd then stop them. And as they ate or took a break, he'd catechize them. He'd teach them something about the faith, something about being greater than just merely human, having more than just money. And they kept coming back every Sunday. They keep coming back. Well, eventually people in town got tired of him meeting with all of these ruffians, right? These no good duders. They wouldn't do any good. They got tired of him being around because these are the people they were kicking out, right? They were like, get off of our porch. Stop stealing our gum from the convenience store. Quit making so much noise at night. Stop stealing beer out of the dumpsters at our bar, right? They were chasing them away, and then John Bosco would get them all together. Well, eventually they kept chasing him around town so much to get him off of their property that eventually said, we have to have a home for ourselves. And so he found this small house called the Pinardi home. The Pinardis owned it. It was just outside in a little place called Valdocco, just outside Turin, basically like west side to downtown or something, you know, not far. And he said, I want this building. Well, he looked it up and it was for sale for $80,000 back then. $80,000. And John Bosco had no money. Back then, priests only got what they made it for like doing a mass, basically, plus Christmas. They called it Black Christmas, by the way. And the collection at Christmas Mass just went to the priests. We should totally reinstate that. Anyways, so he had no money. So he said, I can't give you $80,000. Besides, I don't think it's worth that. I think it's worth $25,000. And the guy, they went back and forth for months, right? Months. And then finally, the guy got so tired of Father Bosco coming and asking for the building for $25,000. He goes, because he knew he was poor. He said, if you give me $30,000 this week, it's yours. And John Bosco goes, great, I have that much money. And he goes, you do? And he said, in a week. Signed a contract to buy it. Within 3 or 4 days, Father Cafasso received a gift from someone for 10 grand. And they told him to pass it on to Father John. And then another time, or a couple days after that, he anointed someone. And she decided to leave her inheritance to Father John in the amount of 20,000. It's exactly 30,000 within a week. And he walked up with a smile on his face and said, that's my house now, to the Pernardis. And he got it. That's just one example. That happened all the time for Father John Bosco. The bank would come to his order when he had kind of built up the place for the Salesian congregation after he had founded it kind of fully. The bank would come and say, you're in debt $17,000. You got to pay at least, you know, $1,000 today. And he'd say, okay, I'll go to my other stash and go get the money. And he would just run away. And then on the way out of town, someone would stop him and say, you're Father Bosco. Will you come and hear my confession or anoint my daughter or pray for this thing? And he'd go to their place and they'd say, we want to thank you. And then write him exactly what he needed to go back to give it to the bank to get him off his tail. Over and over and over it. That would be awesome, right? A pope, whenever he had died, said, one of the Holy Fathers had actually been giving him money, Father John Bosco, because he said, I'm tired of one of my most famous priests never having enough. And then he said, but we knew he was holy, because if he wasn't in debt, he was already begging for the next time he would be. God's got work to do, right? Keep spending, keep going, you know? By the time he had been a priest for just 19 years, he already was lodging 800 boys for a school. Some of them were just going to work, but some of them were in school now. When he started his Salesian congregation, named after St. Francis de Sales, Salesians, when he started his congregation, he only had 12, probably a good number, he had 12 guys who wanted to be in formation in seminary to become priests for him one day, and one teenager. You know who that teenager was? St. Dominic Savio, yeah. He was his pride and joy. That was the kid that John Bosco picked out of like all the other kids and said, he's the one that's going to lead this place one day. And within 3 years of meeting Dominic Savio, Dominic had died from an illness. So he knew heartache too. Anyways, John Bosco's life is littered with providence, amazing stories. He would go into an alley at night because he would go finding someone or looking for money. The boys would say, can we come with you, Father? Because he was small like me. Actually, I got to visit where John Bosco lived. And on that day that we went, me and Father Tony and Father Gary Kaiser, Father Tony Ernst, Father Gary Kaiser, three of us went. It was all supposed to be closed that day for renovation, like the apartments where Father John lived, like where his chapel and stuff was. It was all supposed to be closed in that building. And we're like, man. And I said, let's just go check. So we went to the door, and guess what? It was unlocked. It was unlocked. It wasn't open, but it was unlocked. So, this is priest. I went to confession, don't worry. So I was like, hey guys, it's open, you know, let's go. So we went upstairs. There was no one even in there. We got to go. You're not supposed to even get to go in his room. You just get to see through like the door. We got to go in. God forgive me later, you know. And so he actually, one of his cassocks that he wore was hanging on the wall. And it was hanging like where, like the bottom of it was on the floor. And I stood beside it. It was exactly my height. And I was like, I knew I liked this guy. So he was a small man. And so the teenage boys would say, like these big ones, right, would say, like, can we accompany you when you go out on your visits? We don't want someone to like to pummel you because everyone thinks you're always carrying money with you for all the gifts you're given. They try to rob him. And so he would say, no, God will provide. God will make sure I'm safe. A wolf showed up. The wolf started showing up in town, and it would a wolf mixed with a dog. Anyways, it was like a mutt. It was a huge dog. It would protect him. He would only come around. He wasn't like his pet. He didn't like feed it. It would only come around whenever there was bad news for John Bosco. It would scare off the bad guys, walk John Bosco home, and then leave again. Amazing, right? Like God's providence. Like, what if we trusted that much? You know, how many times people have asked you, like, hey, can you go do this thing for me real fast? You're like, nah, I got to get that email sent. Or I got to get that chicken thawed out for tonight's supper. I got to run to this place before it closes tonight. Like, what if we just, tonight at 4 o'clock, I realized that no one was bringing supper for the house of the sermon. We have a meal brought every Monday night. And at 4 o'clock, I thought, you're me, I've got to cook before 4 o'clock, or before 5 o'clock, when we have like 10 or 12 guys come for supper. Luckily, there was a gallon of beef barley stew from a thing we had in November in the freezer, and that was easy, right? Throw in a pot, done, right? But as I did that, I thought, no, I want to be preparing my homily. I got to get some other things done before 5 o'clock. Like, ugh. And I thought, but I can't not have something at 5. You know what happened at 5 or 4:50? A lady showed up with beef vegetable soup. I'm not kidding. Thank you, right? On all days, too, on St. John Bosco's feast day, feeding guys, right? Young men who were in formation, and a priest who didn't rely on providence. So I don't get it right. Anyways, by the end of his life, John Bosco was called back to Rome by the Holy Father to raise money to build a brand new, huge basilica dedicated to the Sacred Heart of Jesus. It was actually one of his hardest projects because he was basically called in to create a church simply because he was a fundraiser, or people gave him money. And when he got there, he hit a lot of roadblocks, and I think he felt personally that it wasn't supposed to be the thing he was supposed to be doing. God provided, and that church was built and dedicated. I think it was the year after he died in 1888 on January 31st, 134 years ago today. It was dedicated the year after, and today it is now the only church right beside the largest train station in Italy, Termini. And so when you get out of that train station from wherever you come from in Europe, guess what you see? God's house, Sacred Heart, right? Welcoming you to the eternal city. John Bosco was, they basically said immediately we want him to be a saint. We all know he was one. They waited a little while. I think it was 1906. They made him, they beatified him. 1934, he was canonized. And then maybe the most beautifully, in 2006, his mother was declared venerable by the church. That almost gets me choked up, right? I think often we forget about the importance of our families, not just for like guys who become priests or girls who become religious sisters or guys who become brothers or deacons, right? We forget the influence that mom or dad had on that person who's so great in the world. So many times I'm in the confessional and some kid is confessing and they're doing a really good job of confessing. What I want to tell them is like, for your penance, I want you to go give your mom and dad a hug and tell them thank you for raising you right. And I mean that. John Bosco is who we celebrate today because he lived a holy life and he trusted in providence, but also because everyone around him lived their vocations too. Little Dominic Savio, trying to be virtuous, chaste, holy, led John to conversion. His own priest, deeper into faith. His mother led him to faith. The Holy Father led him to faith. Whatever your call is today, honor John Bosco, not just by helping the young, but by living what you're supposed to be doing really, really well.